The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks this week. So when we start thinking about the technicalities of how we connect with consumers in this new world, in this new space, obviously things like social media, mobile, the crowd, advocacy, all of these things are pretty critical components of this new world that we're moving into. It's interesting, during the week, Pew Research released a study in the United States that 11% of the American population have said that they have no interest in the internet and that they're going to stay off the internet for the foreseeable future. And while that's an interesting statistic, I'm sure there is a bunch of people who've also said at times in the past that they're not going to use Facebook or they're not going to use ATM machines or, you know, they're never going to put their credit card online. But behavior has this habit of changing as it becomes more common in our life. So what I really wanted to explore with the show today, and we have three very interesting guests, is I wanted to talk about the potential for further disruption and what the future is going to bring us in respect to the way we interact in the banking and payment space from a consumer and technology perspective. So first up, from a long way away, pretty much on the opposite side of the world at this time of day, is Scott Bales, who's joined us from Singapore. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me.
So just for the benefit of the crowd out there, can you tell me what time is it actually in Singapore right now?
It's 3:07 in the morning.
There you go. Well, thank you for your persistence and staying up and joining us. So let me jump in and let's get to this the factor of mobile and how mobile adoption has sort of taken off around the world, particularly with smartphones. We have close to a couple of billion people now around the world who have smartphones. What's the phenomenon here? Why has mobile, just since 2007 when the iPhone was launched, what's made the mobile, the app phone, the smartphone so successful so quickly?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize, obviously, that the iPhone wasn't the first smartphone. It's just the one that created the best ecosystem that enabled behavioral change. We think about every day, apps in our everyday life, whether it's from finding a restaurant to making payments to reading the news or how we connect with people, is the smartphone now plays such an important role in our life. And the story that I really like to tell that illustrates this in a very powerful way is the story of a little guy that I've made up called Isaac. Isaac is actually born the same day as the iPhone. Which is important and significant because what it means is he grows up in a world where he doesn't understand what I call the analog digital overlap. Brett, you and I, or everyone else on the phone as well, we understand the past. We know what an LP record is. We know what a landline is. We even know what a cassette tape is. Where Isaac grows up in a world where those things are completely alien to him. They are almost abnormal. Phenomenon in the world that he will never relate to. And instead of being shaped by the likes of this, he's shaped by the digital services that we now know in the world. Services like Spotify or Facebook or Twitter, they actually shape his psychological norm of how he evaluates interactions with brands, with services, how he expects to communicate with his peers and social network, how he shares his daily life. These things actually shape exactly how he will evaluate a banking provider, for instance, or where he's going to watch his movies. And that kind of psychological framework was something he'll carry into every facet of his life.
So, he's grown up in a world where all of these things are completely normal, and he hasn't had to change his behavior. His normal reference, his normal behavior is things like mobile, social media, the internet. He's never going to remember a time when, we had to write a check or, you had to buy an airline ticket at a travel agency, for example. Is that where you're getting at?
Exactly. You're exactly hit the mark, because he'll never write a check. In fact, he will only reference check as an historical artifact. And if you tell him to write a check, or if you ask him to fax something or put something in the mail,
yep,
he will be as lost as your grandparents are building their own website.
So, how are these kids going to define the new world? Because obviously, the Gen Ys are starting to come into the workforce now. But when kids like Isaac, start to, be involved in business and so forth around 2020, how are they going to define the world quite differently from their parents or previous generations?
Yeah, so what I say is there's three pillars to the world that Isaac will change, and that's he will be a digital citizen, he will be a digital consumer, and he'll be a digital employee. So those frameworks that we spoke about before, is he'll take into his three roles in the world. So it means that the people he chooses to work with will be subject to that evaluation. The government that he chooses to run his country will be subject to that evaluation. The brands that he associates will be subject to those evaluations. And what will happen en masse is because certain things are a norm to him, him and his peers will be attracted to different services. So the Isaacs of the world are going to be attracted to the Movins and Simples of the world in the payment space. They're going to be attracted to the Spotify's in the music space, the Netflix's in movies.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing will happen right across the board. But when he goes to get a job, so we say he'll probably get a job in about 2021, the idea that he might have to carry around a 7-kilo Dell laptop with a ridiculous amount of security along with a token will be so foreign to him that he would probably opt to not work for them.
Right.
And this is a generation that are already voting with their feet exactly like that.
Yeah. So, tell me about how, in Singapore, we were discussing in preparation for the show today, we were discussing how in Singapore already, because there is obviously a high penetration of Gen Ys in Singapore, very young population, how have they started to craft or, influence the way banking services are provided in Singapore and Asia generally?
Yeah, so, Asia is an interesting space. Singapore, although you're saying that the highest penetration of Gen Y and smartphones, it has been probably one of the slowest in the region to adopt the kind of fully digital services. Yes, we have the likes of the cashless card, which is slowly going towards mobile. We have the idea of Gen Y-oriented brands. But it's actually the larger peers in the region, like the Philippines, Indonesia, and Bangladesh, which have shifted to digital faster, purely because in a lot of these countries, they're building services for the very first time. So I did a lot of work recently in Indonesia and Bangladesh, where they were building financial inclusion services like Bcash or Bank Andara, where this is the first time people are getting money, just in the same way you've seen in Africa. And these services have proliferated faster, purely because it's the first time. They're not replacing anything.
So it's not just about financial inclusion. Then for many of these kids, they're also in places like Bangladesh going to grow up with a mobile phone as their first major purchase or asset. So it's going to be a very interesting. It's digital inclusion as well as financial inclusion to some extent, isn't it?
Exactly, and if you look at Indonesia, they are the largest consumers of mobile website and mobile web pages in the world. Because
and the largest per capita users of Facebook, I think, too.
Correct. So their life is purely mobile first.
So, you know, if you were giving advice to organizations, and I know, you know, we've worked obviously closely together on MoveIn and other projects around the world, but if you're giving advice to organizations in the developed world right now in terms of how they best engage, you know, consumers like Isaac, you know, what organizationally do you think has to change? What's the strategy for starting to think about this at least?
Yeah, so the hot topic I'm really working on a lot now is two things. One is Isaac as a consumer, and secondly, Isaac as an employee. These are two very hot topics right now because a lot of organizations in this space are not only having troubles attracting new customers, they can't attract talent to build for these customers as well. So the three key trends we are really, you know, the top one still is mobile, is around how can they bring mobile to the top of their agenda, so it's mobile first.
Yep.
And it's really about enabling behaviors and experiences. Is that we're still stuck in a rut where we're too much of a product factory, and I'm spending a lot of time having to advise them on building experiences as opposed to products. Other key trends really is around just engaging in a social conversation, of recognizing that, you know, the world of you know, comms and media is now a two-way dialogue. No longer can you dictate a message in a hierarchical way. It'll be a crowdsourced message, and you are only one cog in, you know, a group of millions that have an opinion of your brand. So it's really around how do we educate brands to become a part of a two-way dialogue on their offering, their value proposition in the world, and their brand. And the last one really is around the idea of collaborative consumption. Well, you probably weren't aware through the likes of Landing Club and Kickstarter and so forth, is that one thing that Isaac's generation highly value is the idea of social collaboration. So by pulling those things together, Isaac is more likely to turn to his peers to borrow money or to his peers to raise money for an idea than to an institution to borrow money. I mean, the success of Lending Club has been phenomenal to shift the idea of where consumers actually get credit from. And this trend's only going to accelerate. Yeah, there are three things. That's really on mobile, two-way communications, and collaborative consumption.
And what are the skills that you think organizations need? You know, who are the people in the organization that you'd really be focusing on right now in terms of developing from a skill set perspective? You know, is it data scientists? Is it community managers? What's the key?
Yeah, so one of the key skills I see adding value over the next 5 years is what I call the marketing technologist, where they're a mix between someone who understands the market, they know how to do consumer research, but they also have a deep appreciation and passion for technology. I recently wrote a piece that Richard Picumo says that the CEO of tomorrow's consumer brand is someone who's currently a marketing technologist. He's a fantastic fusion of skills that will eventually grow. So we're speaking to organizations. It's really around how can we fuse those two skills into a team that's very digitally focused, very mobile focused, to actually prepare the organization for the Isaacs of the world.
Right. So, Scott, look, I know it's very early in the morning there, but you're welcome to stick around. We'd love to have you stick around and be on the final segment of the show where we sort of look 5 to 10 years out at the world. You're welcome to stick around if you can.
No, I'll stick around. I'm already awake, so I'll stick around.
Good. So that was Scott Bales calling in from Singapore talking about Isaac, this next generation of consumers and employees. We'll be back right after the break talking with Chris Abraham.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks, and I'm your host, Brett King. Thanks for joining us again. This week, we're talking about what is the next big thing and sort of looking out to the future in terms of some of the trends we're seeing right now, how that's going to affect the way we do business, the way we reach consumers, and the way, of course, the banking and payments works in the future. At this point, I'd like to introduce Chris Abraham. Chris, you're best known probably for your play on social, but you've been otherwise involved in PR, communications, online reputation management. How would you like to introduce yourself to the Breaking Banks listeners?
That sounds perfect to me. My background is in technology, and I started out as a technologist until back in 2003. I moved into the communication world, so I like to think that I've got a little beanie underneath my communications, if you will, broadcasting hair. And so I'd be happy to talk about technology as well as the social media aspect in business and finance.
Now, you have written on social media from a organizational legal perspective. Tell us about the work you've done in that respect.
Well, let me think about that. I have a lot of relationship with the ORM, the online reputation management world, and deal a lot. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV. So really, my understanding of the legal investment with regards to legislation and that sort of thing is by having to hit my head against proposals with regards to pharma and finance, highly legislated businesses and communities that are having a really hard time becoming part of the conversation. I would say that ultimately I'm a Clutranian, which is to say markets are conversations, and it is no longer a conversation from the dais, but a conversation that is oftentimes bottom up.
Mm. So, you know, this sort of crowd mentality, the groupthink, we've seen this particularly in the finance space. We saw it with the Occupy Wall Street movement, and we saw it with Bank Transfer Day. We've seen, even with the the Bank of America debit card, when that came out, you know, the crowd responded rapidly and violently to that proposal. So, are we going to have to be more mindful of engaging the crowd before we launch things? Or, is there a different process that needs to be involved strategically now for organizations who want to get it right from both an online reputation perspective, but also just from an overall brand advocacy play?
Well, I think that in many cases, the fear of blowback has frozen organizations, scared them stiff. I think that it has to be a mixture of, making mistakes and being willing to apologize. The do first and ask forgiveness later seems to be needing to mix with going ahead. I think doing in recon and finding out what a probable outcome, looking at historical context, is a better way to do it than actually necessarily asking your customers whether they think a ding to their credit card based on purchases is going to be something they're comfortable with.
Right.
I mean, Facebook does this all the time. It's called the take two hills and give one back strategy in terms of their privacy, right? They'll make a giant leap in terms of invasion of privacy on Facebook. They'll take two or three hills. They'll get a lot of pushback, and then they'll only seed two of the issues and actually retain the one they want. That seems to be the way that business is dealing with social currently, and it seems to be a very powerful and useful tactic.
So, if you're an organization that it's making this transition from the web 1.0 world or the analog world, as Scott called it in the first segment.
So just how would you recommend to an organization dealing with this issue of creating a brand and creating community following, what's your advice to them to get started on this?
I recommend it be iterative. I believe that it needs to be developed. Your social media marketing campaign needs to be developed more like London than Paris. You need to start with a core, some core choices, adding sharing onto your site or offering a way of letting people know that you've signed up for a service or introducing a hashtag or getting a community manager. If you look back even at podcasts and radio shows by, hallowed institutions like VOA and BBC, you'll see that 6 months ago, 5 years ago, the quality of show was relatively poor. You cannot wait until you have everything perfect before you engage. The internet has very little memory. You can start very amateurishly and in a very small scale. Don't forget, when you do social, you have two clients. You have the clients that are external, but you also have to make sure that you appease and appeal the C-suite, the counsel, the lawyers, and people internally. If you all of a sudden want all of your employees to start tweeting on behalf of their organization, you need to win their hearts and minds as readily as you need to win the hearts and minds of your current as well as your future prospects.
Now, we get asked a lot about the whole social landscape and sort of brand advocacy and all of these things that are the buzzwords around. Where's the money in this? Can you really make money out of this? So what's your answer to that? I mean, I love Gary V's quote to this when he's asked what the ROI on social media is. Gary Vaynerchuk sort of tends to say, well, what's the ROI of your mother? It's like you your mother teaches you everything you need to know and helps you, but you're not going to ask what the ROI is. So, what's the balance there in terms of the commercial aspects of this? Who are organizations that are really good at making money out of this? And why would you do it if you can't make a dollar out of it?
Well, I was walking. I'm in New York City at the moment. I'm based in D.C., and I saw this dude wearing Google Glass, and I stopped him because I'd never seen it in the wild, and it was this gentleman named David Polinchuk, and he is director of AT&T AdWorks Labs, and I didn't know that, but I mentioned my name. He found me on Twitter and invited me to his AT&T LabWorks. And what he showed me is that just based on AT&T's set-top box and the fact that you have a phone in your pocket and that Starbucks works with AT&T in the United States and automatically logs in AT&T phones to Wi-Fi and all these things, he's able to track enough metadata through just the play that we do online, through the touches, the word of mouth, the engagement, through retargeting cookies and all these things, that he can then start to build advertising, customized advertising campaigns that can, in fact, touch the 7 to 12 times people require the touch, and then to ultimately convert through an integrated marketing campaign that includes the conversion to money. in many cases, you know, I love big time radio, and the big broadcasts are merely fodder with which to wrap, you know, the advertisements about Dove and Snow and all these other things. The important thing here is, I think, in social right now, people are too shy to ask, right? People are giving. But at some point, you need to go ahead and you need to extend yourself to the reveal. And you need to say, listen,
I've done this.
This is sponsored by Dove. By Dove 99.999% pure soap, or you know, Jetan. Nobody sold that. We're lucky strikes, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. People are giving, but at some point, you need to ask for something.
But isn't that the common accepted wisdom that, you know, social is about giving, and that gives you credibility, and only then can you get.
Yeah, but people don't respect coy, right? I mean, people do, you know, as the stereotype goes, partners in a marriage can't read each other's minds. I mean, you need to sometimes be explicit. You might need to remind that an anniversary is upcoming, and that you actually don't want to Hoover, you know, for that anniversary. I hate to be so cliche, but I think it's important to. I listen to this podcast called No Agenda, and they have a value for value model, which is to say, we give you this podcast for free, and we don't advertise, but the value for value is that you contribute to the model. They're very open about it, but they have to give quality. They have to give their best stuff. What I really hate is dealing with consultants who are not willing to give their best online. Everything is a paywall to the white paper that they'll give you if you pay money. I think the reason why a lot of these social media projects don't work is because people are not willing to commit their best, and so they're only showing their half best, and so they're not impressing the people they're engaging with.
So, you know, if we look out now 5 to 10 years, one of the things that, you know, we see with the internet, particularly with the dot-com explosion, was that, you know, we have new businesses popping up on top of this new layer of technology, the web, and, you know, doing things very, very differently and blowing apart traditional businesses. Do you see the same thing happening with social media, that there's new communities being created and new ways of connecting to communities and connecting to individuals within those communities, which is going to be a really disruptive form of business innovation and creation?
Well, I think going back to Isaac, and I love that model, right now I'm learning to become an FCC-licensed ham radio operator. Like, I'm totally geeking out. I'm old enough that I like playing with that kind of stuff. I never did it before. But I think that as we move 5 and 10 years forward, we're going to lose more and more of the tinkerers, more and more of the internet producers, more and more of the creators. And I believe that the Isaacs of the future there's going to be fewer and fewer who are pushing the conversation and more who are just commenting as opposed to creating. So I think that it will revert to, through emergence, it'll revert to more of a consumer model than it is in terms of the you know, peer-to-peer model.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It might – from the exciting explosion of the solar system, the coalescing of gases might result into very conventional models in that we saw in radio, that we saw in television, that we saw in cable. So not that I'm not excited about it, but, you know, it's that 80-20 rule, right? So 80% of all the online Isaacs are not going to really force change in a very, you know, the barrier to entry in terms of making change is still low. However, I think that people won't be able to see that door to walk through it as often.
Great. Well, listen, Chris, we're going to go to a break, but if you can stick around the last segment of the show, we'd love to sort of talk a bit about how these things coalesce, mobile, social, and so forth in 5 to 10 years' time. You able to stick around?
Happy to. Love it. Thank you.
Great. We'll be back with Heather Vesant talking about the future of money right after this break.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
What does conscious leadership mean to you? It unites organizations instead of dividing them. By exploring commonly based business challenges, it guarantees an increase in your bottom line. Tune in to Minding Our Business, Creating a Spiritual Economy with your host, Nadine Rogers. Each week, we'll hear from business leaders and learn from their strategies. We'll talk about personal and organizational best practices that you can learn from, and we'll hear from you. Minding Our Business airs live Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait. They just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Brett King on Breaking Banks. Now, one of the things that's been a regular topic of discussion on the show has been what's going to happen with cash, what's going to happen with money and the way we transact. So, you know, we couldn't do a show in respect to what's the next big thing and what does the future hold without having a particular focus on it. So Heather Vesson is joining us. Heather.
Hi, Brett. How are you doing?
Good. So, you know, we met a few years ago as part of the Inner Tribe collaboration from Swift. And at the time, you were working on a very interesting video around the future of money. So tell me a little bit about the work you've done with the global network Swift and the work you're doing generally in terms of the future of money and what led you to do a video on this.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to tell you about it. So I started researching how technology was disrupting the financial industry in 2010. And I did that as part of some academic work. And I found that there was a lot of really fascinating things happening that were really changing lending, how we were transacting with mobile, and even alternate and virtual currencies. And so that led me to create some scenarios about what the future could be like. I'm a futurist, so I don't predict the future. I look at what the future could be. And I created a few short scenario films when I worked with the InnoTribe team, which is the innovation division of Swift. And that's when we met. I was showing one of my short films called Fly Me to the Moon, which showed ways that people could transact and pay and split a check in the future. And I went on to make a few other films for InnoTribe, showing how ways people could transact and use digital assets. And as I showed these videos and spoke at conferences in the last year and a couple years, when I showed the videos, people were so energized. So they were very excited when they were shown this positive vision of what the future is, how these things that they're reading about might play out in pieces of technology, how they would use it, how it was easy. And the more I thought about it and the more I saw people's reactions, and these were conferences that were pretty much like insiders or tech insiders, financial tech insiders, the more I saw these reactions, the more I wanted to share these exciting visions with a broader audience. And so for the past year, I have been developing a television series for a global international audience showing what the future of money is. And it's very similar to some of the formats that I've done before. It is interviewing experts, people like yourself and on your show, what's happening today with technology. And then I put on my futurist hat and I extrapolate out into the future and think about and show through visible scenarios that are acted out in a narrative what these futures would look like. And this is...
Do you think that helps people deal with the reality of change that we're finding, that it doesn't become as scary, these new technologies? I mean, obviously, technology adoption of things like the iPhone and Facebook is through the roof. So, you know, it's getting less of an issue, this fear of change. But, you know, when it comes to something like your money or banking or how you pay, do you find that visualization or storytelling is an important part of the journey for individuals?
Definitely. People are more comfortable talking about sex than money. And when you bring up
this show is not about sex, by the way.
Yes, I have some other research that might apply for that. But I mean, I was in a conversation with some people, and when you ask about people's finances, it's a very intimate question, and people are very uncomfortable asking it. And they require to have some security, some safety around talking about money. To your question, definitely, when people see a vision of the future, they see what it could be like. They can see themselves in the narrative form identifying with these different characters. It becomes less scary. It's not unknown. It's a possibility that they kind of like, that they could really see themselves in. And unfortunately, so many visions of the future are dystopian or negative, and they evoke feelings of fear. And that's really in contradiction with all this amazing technology that this industry is developing. And so the point of my series is to highlight this amazing technology that is being developed and show how it can positively impact people's lives.
So, you know, I find it interesting, you know, we watch these movies sort of depicting the future, and some, you know, get it right, I think, but others are still like, you know, you take something like Back to the Future and things like that, where it's still always cash and, they still might use checkbooks or a plastic card. But, you know, we have so many different payment technologies that are being experimented with and things like that. So as a producer, or a storyteller in this space, how do you play that role of the futurist in the storyteller, and how do you go about predicting, actually, you know, what those things are going to be like in a few years' time?
Well, just to clarify, I don't predict. I talk about possibilities because I believe the future is there are no future facts, and the future is something that we co-create. So something I say today could influence something someone else could do, which would change the future. How do I, you know, come up with good quality visions of the future? Well, I think the visions of the future that are not very good are ones where people don't have good training or understanding on how to look into the future. They don't understand that they need to look at trends. They don't look broadly enough at trends, and they don't see how trends can be extrapolated out and expressed in the timeline of the future. So with a lot of films and narratives, it's often about the story, and it's more about science fiction, and it's not about what's really happening in this reality. My work is based in the research I've done in this reality, what's really happening, what people are doing, what the technology is up to, how users and people are interacting and reacting to it. And then I step back and I take a broad view, and I think about, from a social, cultural, political, military perspective, what are all these different factors coming in with the world, and how could the future of transactions and the future of money be expressed through a lot of different cultural lenses?
Very cool. So tell us about, you've started a Kickstarter project. So we were talking about Kickstarter. Scott mentioned Isaac and those guys love things like Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So tell us about what you're doing with Kickstarter in terms of your TV program project.
Yeah, so today I've pretty much traditionally financed all of my work either through self-funding it myself with, you know, the work I've done on the side, or having great sponsors like InnoTribe and Swift sponsored the production of the videos. And this time I felt like it was time to eat a little bit of my own dog food. So I wanted to experiment with Kickstarter and with the TV series. It's a 6-episode TV series. And what I'm really looking for, because it's a new kind of series, it's a new concept. There's nothing out there that's like this that shows, hey, what's where we are today. This is what the future's going to be like. And so I really wanted to kind of like green light this concept, this idea with the people that would be watching it. And so to do that, I ask people to put their money where their mouth is and contribute to the Kickstarter. I've got some great backing gifts. But it's also to show to my distributors and to the media channels that there is interest in this type of production, that a positive view is something that is really important to be shown for a broader audience. And that there's just some positivity and optimism about the future, which I think is really missing from a lot of media.
Great. So, you know, if you've been following the show and you're interested in Heather's project, which is the Future of Money TV series, you can find that either through heathervesant.com, or if you go to Kickstarter and search on the Future of Money or Heather Vesant, then you should be also able to find that. So, Heather, tell us about the, you know, let's sort of diverge a little bit here. You know, you had in one of my favorite videos that you did, which was one of the first ones, the Fly Me to the Moon video you mentioned. You showed a number of technologies there used to pay. One was an analogy of a sort of a digital currency, not Bitcoin, but something else. One was, you know, a more conventional credit card. Mm-hmm. And one was someone tapping with the phone, and I think someone pulled out a collector's antique $100 bill as part of the video as well. So, you know, when you do these mock-ups and you're creating something that looks realistic, how do you go about the process of that? Is there people you consult with, specialists in that area?
Well, my previous career, I worked for a bunch of startups in Silicon Valley building and developing internet technology products in the 90s and early 2000s. So most of that UI, I developed myself because I did user experience design. And as far as like the products of what those things are, I live in Hollywood, and so I have great friends that are props makers. And they had two guys work on the props for Fly Me to the Moon. And basically together we brainstormed these ideas. I told them what I was looking for. And we put these things together. We had a smart check, which was you able to connect with your mobile device to be able to pay. We had what I called a private coin, which I based off of a lot of concepts with Bitcoin. I had a traditional credit card, which was a little fancy. And then what I think is one of the most exciting ones is I had a corporate currency. The character was the space captain, and she was able to leave a tip for the waiter in the space currency. And the waiter was saving up points to earn a suborbit flight. Now, this was designed and shot and filmed and released in 2011. And last summer in 2012, Virgin Galactic actually announced a marketing program where people could save up for their Virgin Elevate or Virgin America points to win a suborbit flight. And so I'm not going to say that, like, you know, what I, like, my work predicts the future, but today a lot of the stuff I have come up with has mapped very closely with the way the market and the future develops. So I'm very excited to show people more of what is coming.
So tell us about the project in terms of the Future of Money project. How many shows are you looking to produce? What's the length of the period of time it's going to happen over? Who else is going to be involved?
Yeah, so the Future of Money TV series is a six-episode docuseries. Each one is going to be about an hour, and we're going to explore the future of money in six aspects, with credit lending, banking, payment, bartering, lending, the collaborative economy, how we're going to make money. I think the way we're going to be making money in the future is different from the way we're making money now. And then we're going to look at the international monetary system. I'm going to be interviewing at least 50 experts around the world, and I'm raising a Kickstarter for $35,000, which is the production cost to shoot these interviews in five cities around the world, which includes San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, London, and Hong Kong.
Awesome.
And so I have 30 days to raise $35,000 to prove that the world wants this series. So if people like this idea, I encourage you to find the Future of Money TV series on Kickstarter and give whatever you can.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So it'll be great to see if we can get some traction from the Breaking Banks fan on Future of Money. So Heather, stick around after the break. We'll join Chris and Scott, and we'll talk a bit about the 5 to 10 year horizon. We'll be back right after this break. You're with Breaking Banks.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Did you know that at the root of every business problem lies a communication issue? Communication Nation, a show that brings effective business communication practices to the masses, addresses a number of topics and talking points that impact your professional development, as well as business productivity and profitability. Host Jill Schiffelbein makes the theoretical tangible. Tune in each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Be ready to become a better communicator with Communication Nation. Our workplace is dynamically changing. How do you stay ahead of the curve with respect to learning and training? Tune in every week to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development with host Pamela Robinson. You'll learn about real-world strategies, solutions, and resources that will showcase these changes and keep you ready for what's next. The Future of Workforce Learning and Development is heard live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
So you're back with Brett King and the Breaking Banks team for this week, which includes Scott Bales. Scott's Twitter handle is Scotty Bales. We have Chris Abraham. His Twitter handle is, as it sounds, Chris Abraham, A-B-R-A-H-A-M. And Heather Vesent, which is at Heather Vesent, Vesent, B-E-S-C-E-N-T. Make sure you follow these guys and the work they're doing around the world. And to tell you how real-time this show is, Scott's last tweet that went out 37 seconds ago was, what's Isaac's life like in 10 years? And that's the question that we were discussing on the break that I was going to ask him. So our show is so live and so real time that actually the tweets go out before I ask the questions. So, Scott, what's the answer? What's Isaac's life going to be like in 10 years' time?
Yeah, so I mean, it's an interesting question to ponder because, 10 years is quite a long horizon to think about when most people are just tackling with what's going to happen in the next couple of years. But one of the key trends which I'm really following right now is there's a couple of things. Is mobile will more than likely have reached complete saturation, and we'll be on a trend now around of what I call contextualized value. And this is really around bringing together the ideas of what big data can be, along with the idea of service aggregation. So it's almost going to be a world where every time an Isaac of the world interacts with a brand or with a service provider or their own government or another person, is the value of their dollar is going to change based on the context. And the example I always say is that you head down to Macy's to buy a sweater, and that sweater costs $100. Is that sweater could cost a different price based on the day you go in, how loyal you are, how you get scored from a brand advocacy point of view. Are you going to tweet about it? Are you loyal to Macy's? Are you loyal to Nike, who is the brand of the sweater? So all these things I see are going to aggregate over the next 10 years to essentially change the value of our dollar, which is a key trend I see around the future of money.
So, yeah, so your purchase power might depend on your reputation or your influence or how engaged you are with the brand or how engaged you are with the community at large.
Exactly. So I'm doing a lot of work right now really trying to bridge that online-offline world. The holy grail now for the big brands around the world is how can they get link the ROI on, okay, we have 1 million people that like us on our Dove Facebook page, but how can we know that when you go into your local pharmacy or supermarket, you buy a Dove product, and how can we extract that value or even add value into that interaction?
So, Chris, talking about value influence, you know, we have, you know, networks like Clout and Peer Index that measure your influence now. But also one of the things that we were talking about prior to the show and over the break was this area of reputation management, you know. There's always been the old school is saying, well, these kids, you know, they're putting all this stuff on Facebook, and one day when they go to get a job and they've got all these college photos of them getting drunk with their friends, they're going to be in real trouble from a reputation perspective. But even more than that, it's now possible for, you know, the crazies of the world, as soon as they get in their head that they've got a problem with a brand or they don't like someone, then they've got a big platform now for talking about this. So how does a brand and how do individuals really manage their reputation in this open, transparent environment?
Well, while this might be anti-intuitive, the biggest problem people have with their online reputation is leaving their online reputation in a vacuum. Because a lot of, let's say, therapists don't spend time writing into the internet about about what they're doing or what their or their methodology or their papers and so forth, there's a huge vacuum. So if a therapist, for example, fires his or her client, that person, that unstable person, could potentially destroy the practice of that entire of that therapist or doctor. This happens again and again and again because busy people don't have the time, the inkling, or the talent to, if you will, do the yawp of Whitman, to sing thyself, to sing theirself into the world of the internet. So one of the most important strategies for online reputation management is not being careful as to whether or not people photograph you with a drink. It has more to do with being able to write your story in a powerful, persistent, thorough way for the internet, rather Google, in text, for it to consume in a way that when someone tries to attack you, you've armored your own reputation with your own words and the words of those people who are your supporters.
Yeah, because actually getting someone who's upset or not of their right mind to remove bad content about you is a much tougher job than actually having good positive content out there that sort of speaks for itself.
Correct.
So, Heather, sort of looking at this 10 years out, you know, you're embarking on this project on the future of money. How much of the things that, you know, what do you see today in terms of the trends that are really, that you'd like to hone in on over the video because you think they're going to be really influential in terms of where we go 5 to 10 years down the track? Or is this more for you an exploration? Are you not sure and you know that we're still maybe yet to see the next big thing when it comes to the future of money?
Well, I think you've mentioned a lot of really great trends already that are happening that will influence the future. And one thing that has not been mentioned yet that I watch a lot of is what I call the experience around a transaction and the data that is being collected around these experiences of transactions. And there are new values. People are valuing new things. And these values can't be expressed in our existing financial infrastructure with money. Money is very binary. These additional values that you mentioned, reputation, people need new ways to be able to express these things in a way that they can fluidly transact them. We don't have that today. So I think we're going to have some new languages around transactions. And this is definitely something I'm exploring in the series. And I have no doubt that you're going to come away from the series with lots of really cool ideas and visions of what the future can be 10 years out and even 25 years out.
So Dave Birch has asked a question, Heather, which is what new stuff have you already seen since you made the first Future of Money video?
Oh, that's gosh, that's a great question, Dave. I think I haven't seen certainly new technologies, but I've seen the adoption of the newest technologies in interesting ways. And I think that that is what's, we're going to see more of that, because as we get the technology out there more and people are using it and playing with it, they're going to use it in ways that we as creators of and watchers of the technology can't even imagine. That's what happened with the internet. That's what happened with like blogging platforms. That's what happened with music and peer-to-peer. We got to put some of these new technologies into the hands of the users and let them tell us what these things are. And we're going to continue to use the existing security technology things that we've come up with.
Great, great. So just guys, in the last few seconds of the show, thanks very much for joining us. Next week, we're going to have another great Breaking Banks show for you, and we appreciate you all joining us and listening in to Breaking Banks once again. Thanks very much, Chris, Heather, and Scott.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.